This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Back to another episode of the Film Pastor Podcast. This is the sister podcast to the Lambcast, which can be found at largeassmovieblogs.com. I am one of your hosts, The Vern, and joining me as always until she quits for something better, our own Kristen Lopez. Hello, Kristen.
Hello, everybody.
How have you been today?
Or this week? I've been very busy.
Yes. You just got back from a screening, I say, I saw.
No, it was just a regular movie.
I think this is your. I just saw that you went and saw North by Northwest.
Yeah.
Have you seen it before?
I have not. No.
What'd you think of it?
So it was a first time viewing for me.
What'd you think?
It was really good. I'm normally hit or miss with Hitchcock, and I really liked it. Was very surprised at how witty it was, and how it's 90% double entendre, and how much I love Eva Marie Saint. So it was a good time.
Well, I mentioned about this because I was on one of your podcasts, the Titulus Business Podcast, talking about our favorite Cary Grant movies, and this is one that you haven't seen yet, so I was kind of curious about what you thought of it, because this is my favorite Cary Grant movie, and definitely one of my top three, like, Alfred Hitchcock movies.
It wouldn't be on my top three Cary Grant films, probably, but it's easily one of my top Hitchcock films, so much so that I have, like, eight different ideas for things I could write about it, so always nice to come back inspired. So it's definitely something new to add to the list. It's less annoying to me than something like Marnie.
Gotcha. Well, we saw that one, but we're not here to talk about Alfred Hitchcock movies. No, we're here, actually, as you can see in the description of the show, we're here to talk about film festivals. And we brought in a very special guest. We have with us today Alex Heaney of The Seventh Row, which can be found at 7th-row.com. Hello, Alex.
Hello.
Before we begin our conversations about film festivals and how you get passes and whatnot here, maybe you can tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself and your site and the whole thing you do in the blogosphere.
Oh, okay. So I'm Alex Heaney. I'm a film and theater critic based in the Bay Area, but I'm Canadian. I'm the editor-in-chief and founder of The Seventh Row, which is an online publication dedicated to film and a bit of theater that sort of takes a multidisciplinary approach to film criticism. So we try and look at films through the lens of other disciplines and sort of approach things from a slightly different angle. So this past week, we actually just published this great big special issue on Personal Shopper, where we had six different pieces, essays on the film, looking at it from a whole bunch of different perspectives, comparing it to other SAS movies, looking at performance, looking at horror.
Horror, explain that a little bit there. I did think of this movie. This movie's a horror movie?
It plays with horror conventions. So yeah, I would say it's not a conventional horror movie, but it definitely can be slotted within that genre because it absolutely recognizes horror conventions, plays with them, subverts them. So we have a piece that's about that explicitly, but it is like a ghost story. And so pretty much all of our pieces kind of touch on the ways in which it's a ghost story, even if it's not, some of them are just sort of about how it's a metaphor, and others are about how it's actually scary.
Yeah, and I saw on the site too that your site you had an interview with the writer and director Oliver Assayas. Am I saying that right? I'm so sorry.
I think it's Assayas.
Assayas.
It's Olivier Assayas.
How did you get that set up there?
What?
Alex, how did you get that interview with the director of The Personal Shopper? And for those that don't know what The Personal Shopper is, it's the new movie with Kristen Stewart. I don't want to think much more about it than that.
Yeah, she plays a personal shopper, and her twin brother just died, and she is a medium who's trying to make contact with her twin brother. And midway through the film, she starts getting text messages from an anonymous number, and she doesn't know if that's her dead brother texting her, or some creepy stalker, or what's going on.
Cool. But how did you get the interview with the director of this? That's really fascinating.
Yeah, so I interviewed him at the Toronto Film Festival last fall. I was covering the festival as press, and generally when I do festivals, and we run a lot of interviews with directors. We're trying to do sort of technical interviews about the filmmaking process. And so I did some ridiculous number of interviews at TIFF, like 20 years, like so many I didn't want to do any for months afterwards. And one of them was with Olivier Assayas.
Well, that's cool. So yes, definitely check her site out there, 7th-row.com, and check out her posts about her festivals she's been in, interviews she's done. Alex, I want to say thank you very much for being on the show. Now, as I mentioned before, we're doing a show all about film festivals, about how you can get into festivals, how you get passes, and also maybe we can talk about some of the great movies or experiences we've had at festivals. Now, I'm going to start with our guest here, Alex, because you have probably attended a lot of film festivals. First question for you, Alex, and also for everyone in the room here. What was your first film festival that you got into, and how did you get passed for it? I mean, how did that happen?
You mean like that I first went to as
Yeah,
press
as press.
or
Yeah, the first festival you went to as like a press, you got a press pass for this.
I guess the first festival of any festival I went to as press was a Toronto local Toronto French film festival called Cine Franco. This would have been back in 2007. And I discovered that you could get these press passes where you could go see movies for free at festivals, and get into sold out movies, and it was the coolest thing. And then I sort of covered a lot of local, because Toronto gets tons has tons of local film festivals. So I did like Hot Docs, and then I started going to TIFF as just for fun, and then eventually I started covering it. So that was the first one, but if you mean like the first like major festival on the festival circuit, it would have been. Sorry.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. I was trying to figure out the first festival that you went to as a press, and what did you need to do? Did someone contact you? Did you have to go onto the site and apply for one? I mean, what was the kind of the.
Well, so that small one that I did, I think I knew somebody who ran the site that. And they had somebody had given them a press pass, and they were looking for somebody to cover the festival. And through like a mutual friend, the editor got in touch with me and said, "Do you want to, here, we have a press pass. Do you want to cover the festival?" And I said, "Yes." But it totally depends on what festival you're covering. Like a lot of local festivals, it's just, you get to know the local publicists. And then it's sort of like you just send them an email and say, "I want to cover it." And then they say, "Okay, what do you want to see?" And then they put your name down on a list. Like that's probably the easiest way to get in, the easiest sort of festival. And then there's some where you have to fill out a form, but they don't really say no to anyone.
Yeah.
And then there's like the hardest one to get accreditation for sure is TIFF. And I have no idea what mysterious process they use. And I guess the other hardest thing, like it's easy to get into Cannes, but it's impossible to get like a good press pass for Cannes.
Oh, okay. 'Cause for me, I know like my first film festival I ever went to was the Twin Cities Film Festival in 2014. And I mainly went there because there was a movie coming out called The House of Manson, and one of the stars of that movie, he was in a local Minnesota production here in the Twin Cities, and I got a chance to interview him and the director about that movie, and then he told me about his film's gonna be at this film festival, so that he actually kind of helped get me press passes for that, so I could review his movies. And then from there, most of the other festivals I've been to were here in the Twin Cities. The other one was the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Film Fest, and there was a movie called Bread and Butter, written and directed by Liz Manischel. and she was going to be in town for that festival, so I wrote to, they had people that were in the festival, like, look, my best friend's showing a film here, I'm a film blogger, critic, you know, or whatever, you know, I would really love to get a chance to help review a movie, and I got into that festival for that, and then later on, I started writing for a site called Cinema Centuries, and that helped give me passes to join up for the other year of the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Film Festival, and now I'm going back there. This will be like my third year going back there, but I'm hoping later on to try to go out of state. So, yeah, that's basically where I'm going with that right there. But it all had to do with just the people that I knew. And Kristen, I want to go to you with this right now. What was your first film festival you attended, and what did you have to do to, you know, get those passes going?
Well, I've only attended one film festival so far in my career. That's Turner Classic Movies Classic Film Festival, which I'm actually leaving for on Wednesday for my fourth year. And I haven't done anything else in terms of festival coverage, but that process is they make you fill out an application. You have to list, obviously, the outlet, how much traffic they get. You also have to include an assignment letter from an editor, either it's you if you're writing your own site, or an editor that you work under who pretty much says, this is what we need from this writer, this is what we plan to do for coverage, and you also have to provide samples of coverage that you've done. So the first year that I applied, I was just using my personal blog, and I had no plans for them to even accept me. So I think TCM opens press passes about 6 weeks before the festival. So when I sent it in on a whim and they said, okay, we're going to give you passes, I essentially had to scramble to find hotel and airfare after all of that had already been on sale for like 6 months. But it was doable and I did it. And since then, I've just kind of preemptively booked all of my travel accommodations ahead of time on the hope that I will get accepted, which I usually am. So yeah, it's a process. It helps if you have a site with traffic. I have not gone anywhere else, but I do have plans in the coming months. Mill Valley, which is about a couple hours away from me, does a film festival that I'm contemplating doing that's not conflicting. Right now, the problem is timing, because a lot of festivals conflict with stuff I'm doing at the end of the year. And then I'm hoping the big one that I want to do next year is South by Southwest, although I might try CinemaCon, depending on if it's doable, because it is closer to me. But I have plans to branch out.
All right. But I thought you were doing, like, social media programming for the Turner Classic Movie Festival. Like, you were part of the team with that.
Yeah, 2 years ago I did, and last year as well. They're not doing it this year.
They're not doing it this year. Okay.
No.
All right. But they must, you know, respect your criticism well enough to invite you back this year. Like, this year, you didn't have to fill out any application form for a press pass, right?
No, I did.
You did? Really?
Yeah, because there was no social producer program this year, so we essentially had to apply straight press.
Okay, I gotcha.
Like, aside from local festivals, most festivals have an application process like what Kristen is describing.
Yeah.
If you've covered a festival, like say they gave you a pass last year and then you're trying again this year, then they want you to submit your coverage, and they might have a deadline for that, you know, way before the year before. Or you might have to submit it with your next application, and then, you know, they'll see, did you actually use your pass, or is this some kind of scam?
Yeah.
And it usually helps if you promote either the festival or the films. Like, I know TCM, it's great if you cultivate a relationship and you promote the channel throughout the year so that they don't think you're just some person who only pops up in like March to get press creds and you're promoting, and then after the festival's over, you just never mention them again.
I mean, I don't really think that matters for any other festival. It just matters
Exactly. I know Tribeca is happening in the next couple of weeks, and I mean, even that, I'm not attending, obviously, but it always helps. I get a lot of emails from the Tribeca reps who were like, hey, we're screening this, and I'll send them an email like, hey, I'm not going, but can you maybe send me a link? I'd still love to cover the film and promote it, and 7 times out of 10, I'll usually get it. Not anything, you know, big, But a lot of the small independent stuff that usually won't come my way. So sometimes, if you're lucky, you don't actually have to attend the festival to get access to movies. But that's not a guarantee.
Well, that did happen to me at the last Minneapolis St. Paul International Film Festival. A lot of people just sent me links onto my computer, or they sent me like DVD screeners to review, since I couldn't actually make the screening there. And yes, you are right. For those festivals, even local ones too, I remember I had to fill out an application form, just mainly sending out reviews I did on earlier film festivals. So I do remember doing that for each one I've attended there. So
I think it depends. It completely depends on the festival. Like some festivals, and it depends on how desperate they are for coverage. So like with Cannes, you might maybe be able to get a link to one of the films in the director's fortnight or critics week, like at the end of the festival, if you know publicists beforehand, because you've cultivated relationships with publicists through past film festivals. Otherwise, you're never going to get a screener for that.
Yeah.
And then for other things, like I've covered a lot of, you know, the New York film festivals that run through like the Film Society of Lincoln Center. I've covered those remotely. Although I guess in those cases too, a lot of those people I knew from other festivals, because there's sort of a bunch of PR firms that kind of do the festival circuit. And so you'll end up seeing the same people at like Toronto, at Sundance, at Cannes. And I'm sure I've never been to South by Southwest, but I'm sure some of the same people go there.
Yeah,
I get emails from them, and like New York Film Festival. So like, you do enough of the festival circuit, and you kind of get to know those publicists. And if you have a good relationship with them, then they'll tell you, oh, you know, we're covering this. These are the films we're representing. Do you have any interest in covering them?
I definitely agree with Alex, because I know for me, I usually get emails from about the same two or three companies that'll send me stuff, and most of the time I won't have time to watch everything, so I'm really selective about what I'm willing to say, because they do rely on the coverage. But with TCM especially, it's the same PR company every year, and one of the big reasons that I've decided to try to branch out to do more festivals is, yeah, it really helps if people actually can put a name to a face. And you know, I think 90% of our job is networking, so it always helps, because you're going to be dealing with a lot of the same names.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. One person I definitely want to give a shout out to is Ruth over at Flitz Chatter. She's the one that actually got me set up to go to a lot of the Twin Cities film festivals. I also want to give a shout out to my friend Lee Jordan, who is a casting agent here in the Twin Cities. And he was one of the big hosts at last year's Twin Cities Film Festival. Now, I do want my follow-up question here too, is that, do you find yourself getting more letters and things from publicists, or actual filmmakers who want you to review their movies and give them like a good review? I know like publicists and filmmakers are kind of in the same joint venture together there, but I noticed for me, when for like last year's film festival, for the Minneapolis International Film Festival, I was getting a lot more stuff from like actual personal filmmakers wanting me to see their films. Story for this one is that I was going to go to the 2013 Twin Cities Film Festival, because there was a filmmaker named Jessica Cameron who I have interviewed on a few other podcasts I did before, and she was going to be there that year, but I couldn't make it. But she was the one that was going to try and help me get press passes, but it just happened at a time in my life I just couldn't make it out there at all. I'm just trying to figure out, is the best way, if you're starting up a new blog, is it to just contact, you know, publicists or the filmmakers who are making the movies, or both?
You want to do publicists.
Publicists, okay.
In my experience, publicists, because 98% of the emails that I get are from PR companies, because they're the ones that are actually in charge of marketing. A director is just kind of there to do a personal plea to cover their movie. They, in my experience, they have very little. It's kind of like a last-ditch effort. The few times that I've had filmmakers actually email me and ask, and I've stopped doing it because I it doesn't ever end well. It's usually a very low-budget film that is either in a festival or is trying to get some type of coverage in a website, any website, doesn't really matter. And the few times that I've done it and I haven't liked the movie and I've been as kind and considerate in my review as I can without lying, the filmmakers don't like it.
Yeah.
They don't want honesty. They want promotion. So I don't do it anymore. But that's very rare. It's 98% PR companies, because the filmmaker's job is to sell the movie to the people at the festival, not to solicit outside sources at that point. That's why they hire a PR company.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So, sorry.
Don't go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say that this also depends on the festival and on the movie.
Okay.
One of the best movies at the Toronto Film Festival a couple years ago, How Heavy This Hammer, was so low budget they couldn't afford to hire a publicist. It was one of the best movies at the festival. And, you know, it was run by a local, it was put together by a Toronto production company who sort of knew press in Toronto, and they kind of put out a call to journalists, you know, we have a link to our film. If you want to watch it, you don't have to review it, but if you want to watch it, but to potentially review it, you know, get in touch with us. And then, you know, that was one of the best films at the festival. So sometimes with the small films, and even with, like, especially with foreign films, if they're really small, you know, they may not have a publicist, or because they can't, it's just too small. It's, you know, they don't have a marketing budget. But as Kristen said, like, for the most part, you're dealing with publicists. And, you know, I've had experiences, because our site is really well known among Canadian filmmakers as covering a lot of Canadian cinema. So I've had, you know, filmmakers get in touch with me, and then also their PR firm get in touch with me, and then I made plans to interview the filmmaker with the filmmaker, and then the PR firm got all upset that I hadn't coordinated through them, because I was thought, oh, well, I'll just cut out the middle person, because they were going to do it anyway. Yeah, because generally filmmakers don't necessarily know what the process is, especially if they're new to it.
All right.
But yeah, especially with smaller film festivals, like at the San Francisco Film Festival, or at CineQuest, which is in San Jose, or even Mill Valley, they usually have a thing where when you're applying for credentials, where they say, you know, can we give your contact info to filmmakers to contact you? And especially at festivals like that, you might get the odd email from filmmakers. But for the most part, yeah, you're dealing with publicists.
Okay.
But if you're wondering, like, how do you get access to a film festival, that's a completely different topic aside from local festivals, has very little to do with publicists and very little to do with whether or not you know filmmakers.
Yeah,
right.
I'm basically trying to speak about, you know, you're a first-time blogger, you're starting to get more viewership on your site, more subscribers, and then you're getting a couple of local screeners from filmmakers, you're starting to follow them, they're sending you their videos or asking you to look at some trailers they did, and then you find out that they're going to be at this film festival, and you're like, well, that would be great. How do you go to that, and then you go ahead and apply for site. What I'm just trying to figure out here is, because you mentioned that publicists are the best way to, I guess, to help get passed for this, or they're the best people to contact about that.
No, okay. There's a bunch of different things that, it works differently for different kinds of festivals.
Okay.
So if I'm looking at San Francisco, say,
okay.
All of the local film festivals in San Francisco, like the Asian American Film Festival, the Jewish Film Festival, Frameline, Indie Fest, the Doc Fest, I'm trying to think what ones I'm forgetting. Anyway, pretty much all of those, it's the same PR firm that runs publicity for all of those.
Oh, the whole thing?
Because there's only, like, a couple of PR firms in San Francisco. So that, you know, one of those firms is specializes mostly, they do, you know, foreign independent films. So they end up running the publicity for all these festivals. So you get to know the publicist at those firms. And then every time they have a new festival, they'll like send out a press release. Oh, here, you know, we're running publicity for the, you know, whatever festival it is they're running publicity for. And then they say, do you want to cover it? And there's usually with a press release, they'll say, you know, here are the movies that we have screeners for. You can also come attend. Here are the filmmakers who are coming to the festival. And then you email the publicist and you're like, yeah, I'm interested in these screeners. These are the movies I want to go. These are the ones I want to attend. And these are the people I want to interview. That's if you know them. If you don't know them, then you have to send a cold email to the publicist that says, you know, who you are, what your publication you write for, why you're interested in covering the festival, and, you know, what you're looking for from them. And then if you do that in a professional way, they'll usually answer your email and say, yeah, sure, we'd love to have you cover it. What do you need?
Okay.
That's for small film festivals. So that's the same thing for, like, you know, the equivalent in most cities, like the Queer Film Festival, the Jewish Film Festival, the Documentary Film Festival, unless that city happens to have a major film festival of that kind. If you're talking about, but those festivals are not really where films go in order to pick up distributors, right? These are not sales festivals. These are audience film festivals.
Yeah.
They're just for locals to see a movie earlier on and maybe have a chance to interact with the filmmakers or get to see a lot of films of a particular topic that may or may not get have been picked up.
Either they're not there to get sold, actually. They're not like from a business venture. It's not
right.
Like a big thing.
Yeah,
not like
not...
a Toronto or, you know, Cannes or something like that. Okay.
Yeah, stuff like Sundance or, you know, the big films, the film festivals that, you know, critics like Alex and I just kind of prep for. Those are the films where it's a major studio slate or however much they're trying to promote that are either trying to get distribution to eventually go to a wide release or, you know, an Oscar campaign, stuff like AFI Fest, where there, again, it's close to the end of the year and it's just kind of, Alex will explain it better than I'm doing, I'm sure, but
okay.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll explain maybe I should step back and say, explain like how a film gets to an audience. So if you're just like a small independent filmmaker or even if you're like with Stillman and you're making, you don't have a studio behind your movie, then generally the first thing you do is you want to get your movie into a film festival. And the best thing to do is to get your film into an international film festival where there are lots of sales agents. So that would be Toronto, Berlin, Venice, Telluride, Cannes, Sundance. Those are sort of the big international film festivals, maybe Rotterdam, depending on like if you're super avant-garde. So the way those festivals work is they have huge amounts of press and industry come to them, and they're deliberately trying to sell films there. And most films that go to those festivals don't have distribution. Now, what Kristen is talking about is this incredibly small selection, which gets all of the press, which is a whole other problem, of films like Toronto and Cannes and Sundance. They're also a launching point for awards campaigns. And a very, 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 very small number of the films there, like maybe 10 of the 200 that are screening, or at TIFF, maybe like 20 of the 300 that are screening, are films that already have distribution, already have a studio behind them, and are just using the festival to get extra press and coverage and launch their awards campaigns. Pretty much everything else at all of those festivals is looking for a distributor. Now, that doesn't mean that it could still be a major director with a major cast, and they're going to have no problem finding a distributor. But this is what films do in order to get a distributor. And generally, even if you are picked up for distribution, then it's a good idea to keep going to as many festivals that will accept you, because each of those festivals is an opportunity to build word of mouth from, if it's an international festival, then from international press. Like, it's really good if you do, you know, say, Toronto, Sundance Berlin, or Sundance Berlin, or what people do in the fall festival circus is they'll do circuit is Venice, Telluride, Toronto. And then you get like the maximum amount of international coverage, the maximum amount of buzz, so that you have some, you know, marketing behind you, even if you have a distributor already. Then there are local film festivals, and local film festivals are a completely different matter. They don't have huge swaths of industry that come to them. So the purpose of a local film festival is, I mean, it's a bunch of things. One is it could be to screen films that don't have distributors so that you get to see a movie that you may not otherwise get to see in cinemas. It could also be to promote movies of a certain kind, like LGBTQ-focused films. And generally, film festivals, they invite directors, they might invite cast members. So it's an opportunity to, like, interact with the people behind the film, get to see it with a big audience. You know, and one of the things, especially if your film is kind of like a niche, fits into one of these niches, like most cities have a documentary film festival, most cities have most liberal cities have an LGBTQ film festival or a Jewish film festival. And if you're like a Jewish film, you will go to every single Jewish film festival. And then that helps you build momentum around the movie, even if you have a distributor. So how you
interact, Alex would explain it better than I would.
Yes.
So how you interact with each with a film festival and with individual films depends on what kind of film festival you're at and what kind of film you're dealing with. Okay. You know, if you're dealing with the new Spielberg film premiering at TIFF, you're going to have a very different experience than if you're dealing with a small movie from Bulgaria that's looking for distribution. Equally, that's going to be a different experience from if you're looking at, you know, the latest Whit Stillman film that is still looking for distribution at that festival versus if you're looking at, you know, a film by maybe, say, a major international auteur like The Dardenne that may have distribution even or maybe looking for distribution but is not doesn't have a major studio arm behind it. You're going to have a completely different experience, including how helpful the publicists are, how easy it is to get a screener link, how easy it is to get a ticket to see the film, how easy it is to get access to talent for interviews. So it's like a completely different process, which is why it's kind of hard to, like, I'm not sure what you're looking for exactly. You know, if you're looking at what is the process for how do you build a profile on your, as far as your site and your, I guess your clippings of film festivals is a different question for how do you build your site into something that can cover film festivals is a different question from how do you just get to cover film festivals. Like it's a completely different.
I'll try to take it from there. Cause I think, yeah, it's a different process depending on where you're at as a writer. Because for me, you know, TCM being a niche film festival, it helps to have a niche blog like I do, like I did, so that I could say, hey, I'm a classic film blogger, you're a classic film festival. It's kind of a match made in heaven to give me credentials so that I can promote your brand because I'm already promoting your films on a daily basis. Now, I could never take my site, my classic film site, and put that on an application for something like Sundance because there's no reason for them to give me credentials. So as a writer, if you want to stick with niche film festivals, it's great if you write a niche blog. If you're interested in actually attending big major film events, you know, something like a Sundance or something like a Cannes, A, you need to be covering film pretty much 24/7, and you need to have a site, I would say, that warrants that coverage. So in my case, you know, a lot of the applications that I've looked at in for other film sites, I mean, they're always looking for how much traffic the site that you're working for is getting. So for me, you know, I freelance for so many other sites that have far bigger numbers than my classic film site does. So that helps. So mostly I would, in my experience, I would say that if you want to attend major film festivals, you would need to either have a site like Alex's that's, you know, definitely well-regarded and well-known, or you need to, and or part B to that is be a writer who has cultivated a body of work that it always helps. Alex and I are both in OFCS, you know, so it's evident that we kind of consume film 24/7 and or work for a site as a writer that covers film festivals that has a large following.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
Okay.
and the other thing I would add too is like, say you're a writer who covers film, but you haven't covered festivals yet, and you're like, I want to find an outlet for which I can cover film festivals. That itself could be a process for establishing a relationship. I mean, some outlets are like, I am just so desperate to have every film festival covered. I don't care who you are, we'll get you a press pass. And if you're big enough, the festival doesn't even care if you produce quality coverage. On the other hand, other sites, you know, the thing about festival coverage is timing matters. And, you know, if you go to a festival, you're seeing tons of movies a day, and then you're trying to produce regular coverage of it. So, like with our site, we just have a policy where we the only people we let cover film festivals for us are people who have written for us before, because people who aren't used to our process, who don't know how to meet our standards, like it could take a month of edits in order to get one article ready, and that's just not possible in under a film festival environment. And I think that's probably the case. I mean, we have a much higher editorial standard and to go through a lot more edits than most sites, but I would say that most sites probably want to have some kind of relationship with you for the same reason. Like they want to know that they can trust you for your festival coverage, because also if they get you a credential under their site, then their site is kind of on the line. If you don't produce and they don't publish, then that could interfere with their ability to get future accreditation for future writers.
Sure.
I would agree. That's something that's I've had editors tell me, you know, if it's the same with like filming with like writing a film review. You know, you don't want to have it written 3 months after the movie comes out, especially if you have like a screener for it. So for me, doing TCM as a film festival attendee, it's not, yes, it's fun to watch movies and to meet celebrities and all of that, but and Alex would probably agree with me, it's also work. And so for
Oh, yeah.
me, I'm not just running from A to B to get in line for a movie or covering the red carpet and interviewing people just for the hell of it. I'm also going back to my hotel room at midnight, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, and staying up to write stuff that will go up the next morning, while I'm running to the next thing. It's a very quick turnover, that requires you to be alert and to be providing coverage, and you know, you definitely want to be timely. I've known writers who have been given press credentials and have not turned in work while the festival is ongoing, and that defeats the purpose of going for a lot, as you know, for a lot of editors, because they're like, we get you the credential so that you can provide copy. If you cannot do that, then you're essentially just having fun. You could have bought the pass yourself.
Okay, so here's the thing too. Okay, you got the press passes. You know, you attend the screening here. What's like a time limit though? Let's say you got your tickets to attend a movie, and you see the movie there. What's the time limit that you should put a post up about that movie? Maybe
I
the
would say
day
as
or.
soon as I would say as soon as possible.
Okay.
So for me, I TCM is 4 days, and I am up either at 2 in the morning writing, either at the bare minimum, if I cannot absolutely get a review out, I will at least do a summary of the day, or post pictures or post other things, so that there is something. And then when I come back, then like next 2 or 3 days is just me writing individual reviews of everything that I saw. And I do take notes so that I have all of this. Or I get up super early at like 4 or 5 in the morning to do. I mean, it's living off of like 2 or 3 hours of sleep the entire
Okay.
time you're there.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of depends on the festival
Yeah.
and the site you're covering for and what kind of coverage they're looking for. You know, some sites will run like festival journals where you're like, here's the story of my day and the things that I saw.
I do that a lot.
Yeah, and those are not like particularly hard pieces to write. Like you can sort of, you don't need to like worry about structure too much. They don't have to have deep insights into all the films. You know, sites that run that generally their goal is quantity. I'm not saying that it's not quality, but it's mostly we want, you know, daily coverage. And then you're gonna, if you want daily coverage, then you're gonna produce different kinds of pieces. Then if you want to have a certain kind of piece, then it may not be possible to do that
Well, that's why when I submit application, I always tell them up front, look, I'm going to give you a weekly reviews of what I saw that week. I'm going to do like a weekly column, or I'll do like a weekly podcast. I'll give you reviews, full reviews of all the movies there. But if those movies are going to screen during the week, you'll get all those reviews about it on that week, by that week. Because I work a full-time job there, and a lot of times when I'm at film festivals, I go there for mainly just two film screenings. I get home, I write something up, and then I gotta work the next day. So I just tell the, you know, whoever's running the festival that, look, I'm gonna get you reviews done, but they're gonna be posted on my site on these times. And usually if I give up, you know, a film festival as that date of when I'm gonna be posting a review, they're usually good with that. Or sometimes they're right back to me like, look, we want to have the review done by this time, but they'll give me dates for that too. And I'm very small, low here. I've only been to, you know, just a couple ones there. But they're not anything big. They're just, you know, local ones here in my home state of Minnesota. But I find that, yeah, if I just give those film festivals exact dates, they're usually pretty good about that.
Yeah, I think it's different. I know that most, you know, and Alex and I would, Alex would, I'm assuming, agree, because most writers who especially have to travel, you know, to film festivals, it's definitely a quicker process than even, you know, and Alex lives in the Bay Area, so she knows even something that's relatively local, it's still a rather fast turnaround, unless I'm putting words in your mouth.
No, I think that's true, that it is generally a faster turnaround. You know, like, if you go to, say, Mill Valley, which is in, you know, end of September, beginning of October, and then you publish your Mill Valley Roundup in December.
You missed the boat.
Like, exactly. You know, Mill Valley happened in October, yeah. Nobody cares in December.
Okay,
but there's also, you know, middle ground where, you know, there might be a film that you saw, like, in Toronto, say, but then you know it's going to go to New York, and then you know it's going to go to Mill Valley, and then you know it's going to be at, you know, 10 festivals in the fall, and then it's going to open. So then it depends on, you know, if that's not your only thing that you're writing, that might be an okay thing to publish in the middle of October, even though TIFF ended a month ago, because that movie is still relevant. You know, like, if you published a La La Land review in October of last year, it still would be relevant, even though it premiered in... Well, it had its first screening in Venice in August, and then it had its screening in Toronto in September. But if you published it in the middle of October, your piece would still be relevant. You just wouldn't be one of the first 10 publications to write about it. And the publication you write for may care about being one of the first 10 or may not.
Yeah.
And, you know, similarly, a lot of movies that go to Sundance go to Berlin. So maybe you didn't get around to covering the thing while it was screening at Sundance, but you know it's going to screen in Berlin 2 weeks later. So that's fine.
Okay.
But yeah, and then there's also strategies for handling the fact, like, maybe you're trying to do daily coverage, and maybe you're also trying to do daily coverage and reviews, and it's not really realistic to write a 500 word plus review every day while you're at a festival. You will just die.
Well, one thing I'm doing,
it's not possible. So one of the things that you do is you can get screeners beforehand. So when I cover TIFF, you know, TIFF begins a month before TIFF begins. Like, they start doing press screenings, and then you start getting screeners a month before TIFF begins. By the time TIFF begins, you've seen 30 films and banked 15 reviews.
Oh.
Alex is my spirit animal.
Wow,
for that reading is
amazing, yeah. Jeez. That's one thing I want to do, too, for the film past year, is that each week, I'm going to be covering the Minneapolis International Film Festival this year, and each week I want to do like a small podcast show about the movies that I saw at the festival that week, and, you know, hopefully post them out to, you know, the filmmakers whose films I saw, and just kind of do something like that, as well as doing written reviews, like individual reviews. But those individual reviews that I want to do will most likely happen towards the end of the festival. Like, these are movies that I saw screened at the festival that hopefully you can see soon. And I'm just curious, Alex, is that still a good thing to do? Because even though the film is already screened at the festival, as long as I have that review done by the time limit of the festival, because my festival goes from, like, April 13th through the 29th, And I always try to do, every time I do a film festival, as long as the review's done by the end of the festival, I think I'm still good with the people that gave me press passes, because I'm not trying to take advantage of the press pass. I just don't have a lot of time to write up a review every day that I'm there.
Right. And most people don't have time to write up a review every time you're there, every day that they're there. I mean, that's a conversation you have to have with your editor,
Okay, gotcha.
because everyone's going to be different, and I have a different opinion depending on the film and what else you're covering. And so I don't even have a pat answer for us. But, generally, I don't want you to tell me you're going to write a review of something and then I get it 3 months after the festival.
Yeah, I gotcha.
But we have published things, a month after the festival because it was a movie that the writer really cared about. They had a really complex argument, and it mattered more to us that we got it right than that we got it first. But that's how we run. Other publications, they want to be, this it screens today. They want and when people go searching for reviews the next day, they want to be one of the reviews that you find. It doesn't matter if the and I'm not saying that they're all going to be pieces of crap, but some publications literally don't care. Like, I don't even think that they read the piece before they publish it. They just care about being first. And so if you're writing for a publication that cares about being first, then, spending a month turning it into a masterpiece has no value to them.
Okay.
Whereas,
Gotcha. Well,
and equally, I personally would not want a writer to write for us who gave me copy every day that was not good copy. I would rather them give me copy once every 2 days or once every 3 days or something that was good copy.
sure.
But, it depends on the publication because for us, we don't care about having it every, like, we don't care about being first or having the most coverage. But we're also not a giant site that tries to cover every film. So it depends on where you're writing. And also, it depends on what you're trying to do. If you're just asking, so that the festival will be happy, that's a different question also. If as long as you're doing some coverage during it and you do something similar to what you said you would do, or something, provide some value to them, then they're happy. If you wait, if all of your coverage for the festival runs a month after the festival, that's not good.
Yeah.
If you run a bunch of stuff, maybe the festival is 2 weeks and you run five pieces during that, and then you're still running pieces a month later because it took you a while to do it, that's probably gonna be fine for most festivals.
Now, I'm curious, Alex. Now, 'cause I know, like, Kristen, she, writes for different publications here and there. Was that the same thing for you? Besides your site, SeventhRow.com, do you also have you written for other publications? 'Cause I'm just trying to figure out for our listeners there about, how you're able to go and attend all these big festivals, because you started doing local ones there for Canada, and I'm just kind of curious about, were you still writing for SeventhRoyal.com when you were applying for press passes for, the Toronto Film Festival and for Cannes as well?
Alex is the lady editor I wish there were more of in the world.
Really?
Aww.
There actually are not a lot of female editor owners of major websites. It's predominantly male-based.
Okay.
That's true.
Okay.
Yeah, every major film festival that I've covered, I've covered under Seventh Row, and
Really?
or I've sent people to cover. So in the last year, we've had writers get accreditation through us for Sundance, Berlin, Hot Docs, San Francisco, TIFF, Cannes. I'm trying to remember what else. I think those were the major ones.
Oh gosh. All right. I was really kind of curious about that. That is really amazing to hear, Alex. And you've definitely given us just a great listen on everything about Film Festival. You definitely taught me a lot, actually, and I really want to step up my A game now for this year's festival that I'm attending. I'm going to take a quick little break right now so we can hear some ad spots from some other podcast shows that we want to promote. But we'll be right back, because I want to hear just some quick stories about our favorite festivals we attended or any funny stories we want to share, okay?
We'll return after these announcements.
Hey guys, this is JD from the In Session Film Podcast. Every week on our show, you can join my co-host Brendan and I as we review the latest films that's out in theaters. It also inspires us to discuss a top three list of some sort, and we have a lot of other fun movie discussions as well. It's always a blast. And we also have a show on Fridays called our Extra Film Podcast. This is a show that gives us the space to talk about the latest indies and art films and other classics that we normally just don't get to talk about on our main show. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, and more. In fact, you can just see everything about us, including our social medias, at InsessionFilm.com. So join us every week. We'd absolutely love to have you.
I'm tired of watching all these good movies.
Are you tired of award-winning cinema?
Sometimes I like things and sometimes I don't like them. You got a podcast for that, pal?
I watch all these bad movies and I don't know what to think about them.
I don't like house guests, but I do like them in other people's houses.
I wish somebody understood my love for Men on Fire. Ah!
Do any of these complaints sound familiar? Well, look no further than the Second Class Cinema Podcast.
My doctor says laughter is the best medicine, and let me tell you, buddy, I got diseases up to here. Successes?
We've got those.
Failures?
We've got those, too.
It's everything I've wanted in a podcast.
Second Class Cinema is the weekly podcast where we watch a B-movie and immediately discuss it. You can listen to all of our episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, SecondClassCinema.com, and FollowingFilms.com. And send us $10 in an envelope. You don't have to, but you can if you want to.
And we're back. All right, as I mentioned before the break, I want to just hear just some little quick stories about maybe some favorite film festivals you attended or some funny stories or some really good movies. Alex, I know you've seen a lot, and I know it's hard to basically pinpoint your favorites, but do you have any favorite stories or films that you saw at festivals that you've been to?
Yeah, I guess I'm probably most Twitter famous for being like the biggest Louder Than Bombs fangirl. So this is the latest film from Joachim Trier, who directed Oslo August 31st, which is one of my favorite films. And I basically went to Cannes in 2015 to see his new film. Like, that was my reason for going. I had bought my ticket, and then I was just relieved when it was announced that it was going to be in the competition, because that was my reason for going. And, you know, I was so excited about it that I was tweeting about it constantly. And then the kid who starred in it, Devin Druid, saw my tweets because I was like the one person constantly tweeting about it, and started following me on Twitter. And so we became Twitter before it even premiered. We were Twitter friends. And then, like, it premiered and I loved it. And I was the person. It kind of got mixed reactions, which is a complicated story, largely related to the fact that at Cannes, people do not think about anything before they write reviews. So if a movie has any nuance, then it's screwed. And like, people had published their reviews before I was leaving the building, the screening room, because like, I had gone to the bathroom. And as I was leaving the building, I saw the first reviews being published, and I was standing there going, I haven't even decided what I think about the film, and people had published their reviews. And that was the first press screening of the film.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's, you know, and I've seen people at Cannes, you know, you see them leave the movie before it ends, and then you're sitting next to them in the press room while they're filing the review, and you see them writing a review on that film, and you're like, I know you didn't see the whole film. I was sitting next to you. I know you didn't see the whole film.
Do you actually call them out on there? Do you actually talk to them and call them out?
No, because, I mean, it's an extremely sexist culture, and it wouldn't do anything for me. Really? I mean, I might call them out for it on Twitter or, like, tell people about it later, but there's no value in saying it to their face.
Don't you just go on, like, well, you go on their site and say, look, you did not review this movie at all. You left halfway through. I was there. And then tweet that out to their other followers and...
I mean, these are for, like, major publications.
Okay.
Like, I've seen...
Yeah, you don't want to bite the hand that, unfortunately...
Okay.
That too. Yeah, if you ever want to write for that publication, you maybe don't want to.
Yeah, well, and Alex and I both you know, as women writers on the internet, we're not afforded the same privileges as male writers, and that that goes as far as talking shit about other people.
Okay. Kristen, let's hear from you. Any good stories to tell from the Turner Classic Movie Film Festival?
Oh, God. You know, probably not movie related. I tend to be the person that I'm assuming they've changed the ways they have celebrities come out, because I'm assuming I'm a hazard that they've realized they need to up their security. So
are you attacking people, Kristen? Are you attacking people at festivals?
I have. Right. And Alex knows this about me because her and I fangirl about stuff on Twitter together. So she knows that I can be weird. I think the first year I went to TCM, Bill Hader introduced the Muppet movie. I did not care about going to see the Muppet movie. I cared about going to see Bill Hader, because I love Bill Hader. And the way that the screening was set up, there's a pool at the hotel where they're screening the movie, and the pool is on the left, and the screening section's on the right. And I went to the bathroom. Most of my stories usually start with me going to the bathroom. So I went to the bathroom. I thought I had plenty of time. I come out and I'm stuck in the middle. And the introduction has started. So Bill Hader's in the center between, he's got the pool on his left and the people sitting in the seats on his right. And there's me in the middle coming out of the bathroom. And he does his introduction. He does all this. And, you know, the movie's going to start. And he says everything and he gets ready to leave. And as soon as he puts the microphone down, all these, like, PR people, like, swarm around him and are, you know, talking to him. And they're trying to, like, usher him off to the side. And I just stood there and said, well, no guts, no glory. And I blitzed through everybody. I'm pretty sure I ran over a woman. And I jumped in front of him and I said, is there any way, shape, or form that I could get a photo with you? And of course, who's going to say no to the girl in the wheelchair that's standing in front of you? So he said yes. And we kind of went over to the corner, and I'm like gesturing to my friend because I don't want to waste his time. And I'm like, just hurry up and take the damn picture. Just take the damn picture. And of course, her camera is not working, and he's, you know, joking about technology. And I'm just sitting there like beet red, like, holy shit, this worked. And I got my picture with Bill Hader. And the next year, the guests were on one far, far corner of the screening section by the pool, so you can no longer access them coming out of the bathroom. And I'd like to think that that's because of me.
So you just went in there to get Bill Hader right there, no matter who was there. I like it.
I've done that several times. I'm sure that Ben Mankiewicz is aware, the TCM host, knows that I'm coming, because I run into him. I usually plot where he's going to be, and I'm usually always there. I'm like Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction, without the bunny boy link.
You just know what you want, Kristen. You know what you want, and you go out there and get it no matter what. That's what I love about you.
It's all just a prep for whenever I'm in a film festival setting with, like, Oscar Isaac or something. Just blitz him.
You're getting prepared is what you're doing. You're getting prepared of when he's there. It makes sense. Okay.
That's true. So yes, TCM has limited access to celebrities since, and I'm pretty sure that's because of me. Other TCM stories, I yelled at Mel Brooks once in a bathroom. I didn't know he was in the bathroom. I was just pissed that I had to wait for the bathroom and Mel Brooks was using it. Felt very bad after a while. And Keith Carradine is essentially my TCM best friend, because every year that I'm there, he always finds me and we end up talking about weird stuff, and it's super fun. So thus why I'm going to more festivals. I'm very distinctive and it ends up working in my favor.
That is awesome. My stories are not nearly as heightened as both of yours. I did enjoy going to the 2015 International Film Festival and going with the director of the movie, Bren Butter, was there at the festival. And seeing her go outside to try to promote her film, just grassroots, was really kind of cool. Just her just talking to people, you know, spin out flyers, being really loud with the crowd there. I mean, she was like a circus ringmaster. She was really amazing. And she actually was able to pull in a good amount of crowd of people to see her movie. It was really cool. My other favorite story happens at the 2014 Twin Cities Film Festival. We had a screening of the movie House of Manson, which is about Charles Manson. And during the screening, it was kind of cool the fact that the guy who was playing Charles Manson, Ryan Kaiser, along with his other helpers, were sitting right behind me. So we had like him and Devani Penn, who played like Susan Atkins, sitting right behind me while the movie's being played. And just for me personally, seeing a movie about Charles Manson on screen, and then you look behind you, and there's a guy who's playing Charles Manson, is right next to you, and he still has the same type of hair and beard that he had there before. It was kind of a cool thing to see. And that's one of my, you know, personal favorite moments of the film festivals that I've been to. So that's it for me. I do want to thank both Alex and, of course, Kristen for being on the show today. Alex, maybe you can tell our listeners just a little bit about where they can find you.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at BWestCineast. That's BWestCineaste. You can find my writing on The Seventh Row, which is 7th, SEVENTH, row, row.com. And you can hear me talk about Shakespeare on the 21st Folio podcast, which is 21stfolio.com.
It's super awesome. I recommend it.
What's the latest episode you did with that podcast?
Well, we've kind of been on hiatus for a while because we had our editor's computer died, but the most recent episode was in October, I think, and I interviewed Matias Pinheiro about his film Hermia and Helena, which is kind of loosely based on A Midsummer Night's Dream. And so I was talking to him about sort of what it's like to loosely adapt Shakespeare and Shakespeare in translation, and why he loves doing all these films that are why he loves Shakespeare.
Sure. Now, is that like on iTunes or Podomatic?
Yeah, it's on iTunes. Okay. And then you can also, it's on SoundCloud. If you go to our website, or you can find us on Twitter at 21st Folio, you can find links to where to download it. But usually most of our episodes are not interviews. They're usually we talk about a Shakespeare production that's either like a film or a recorded theater, and we have a discussion about that production.
Well,
all modern things.
That's
and her tweets recasting Shakespeare productions or asking what one actor should do Shakespeare wise, always fun. I love reading them.
Yes. Well, I'm Andre Holland's new agent, so.
Yes, I support this.
Oh, all right. Well, I promise on the next, when I do another Grayson with Podcaster episodes, I will feature a section of that show on that next show I do. Because I want to try to build, you know, promotion for different shows. I think that's going to close up things right now for this particular episode of the Film Pasture. On our next episode that we do with me and Kristen, we want to know what is your favorite movie you've seen in theaters. It's going to be May, which means summer season has started, which means a lot of great big movies come to theaters. But we want to hear from you, what are your favorite movies to see in theaters? What do you think is the best movie to see in theaters? I'm going to post something on Twitter as well as our Facebook page. Hopefully we can get more audience participation about this question. And we're hoping to have another great guest as always. For our show, you can always find our show either by going to thelargeassmovieblogs.com and go into the podcast and network section that's there. We are on Podomatic. We are on Stitcher Radio. You can always find us by going to Twitter. Just type in at the Film Pasture. You can always find me. I'm at Video Vanguard there on Twitter, as well as Kristen. Kristen, you want to tell our listeners where they can find you online?
I am always on Twitter at Journeys_Film, and you can find a compendium of most of my writing at medium.com/@KristenLopez.
All right. Tell me real quickly, what's going on with the Ticklish Business podcast?
Ticklish Business is doing good. I just posted my long-awaited episode with guest Terrence Johnson about Gone with the Wind, which was very funny, because I don't like that movie. So, and then next week will be a special TCM tips and tricks episode with some of my TCM audio from last year, which is going to kick off essentially the next two or three episodes of being just TCM Film Festival audio from this year.
And I should mention, too, for the film past year, there is going to be, like I said before, little, like, weekly blurbs of what I've been covering at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Film Festival. And then in May, we're going to do our official about what you've seen in theaters. That's basically going to be it for the
And by May, I already think I know what I will be talking about, depending on how good it is.
Really? Ooh, I'm going to be intrigued. I'm holding myself in anticipation for that one. Yeah.
It'll be a biased answer, but it'll be an answer.
That's okay. Well, I appreciate that. Again, thank you everyone for listening to the show. It was definitely an educational experience for me. I hope it was for you. And that's going to take care of everything. So I'm going to say goodnight to you all. And take care.